the Financial Sense Lifetime Income Program. Now, here's the Financial Sense News Team, Jim Poplava and John Loeffler.
Well, you can't turn on the television and see all those wonderful ads about these new diet programs, all of them promising vast amounts of weight loss. You will be looking thin and probably be on the cover of a magazine shortly. Well, do these diets actually work? Well, that's the discussion today. You've heard of the paleo diet, vegetarian diet, the South Beach diet, the Mediterranean diet. There's all kinds of diets. In fact, U.S. News and World Reports does a study on over 40 of them each year. Joining me on the program today is author and proprietor of Muscle for Life, Mike Matthews. He also coaches trainers. Mike, if there's one thing that we know today, there is no shortage of all kinds of diets out there. There's the DASH diet. There's the paleo diet. There's a vegetarian. There's veganism, Mediterranean. There's so many diets, it almost gets confusing. Let's talk about those diets. Do they really work? And are they missing out on something? Because I know people that have gone on the program. I won't mention the ones they've gone on, but as soon as they go off them, the weight comes right back. So something isn't working here.
Yeah. So as you said, there's a profusion of diets out there that you can follow, and that's not going to change. Every year, there's going to be the next it thing, the next diet du jour. And the reason for this is, honestly, it's really just more marketing than anything else. Two of the most powerful words in marketing are new and free, right? So people are constantly looking for what the new thing is. What's the new science? What's the new breakthrough? What's the new diet? And you have a lot of people that have tried things previously that maybe worked to one degree or another. But now, as you said, maybe they gained all the weight back, or maybe they didn't really lose any weight in the first place, or they didn't feel good, or it wasn't sustainable. And so, you know, they haven't given up though. So they move on to try to find the next thing. And the problem is, when you get away from the marketing and you just kind of get into the science and you get into the literature, it goes beyond just diet or what people associate or how they might define diet. And it's really kind of getting to the fundamentals of the human metabolism. And if we're talking about weight loss, we should be more specific and say fat loss, because the goal isn't to just lose weight. Because, for example, you could lose a lot of muscle and lose weight, but you wouldn't be doing yourself any favors. Yeah, sure, the number on the scale would go down, but you would look in the mirror and not be very happy with what you see. And it's just unhealthy for you to lose lean mass. So to be specific, when we're talking about fat loss, when you start looking at the fundamental mechanisms, you know, physiologically, and how do you reduce total body fat mass? What's the science in play? And physiologically, how does that work? It's much simpler than many people have been led to believe, but it's also not very sexy. It doesn't lend itself well to marketing campaigns, because unless it's connected to some element of that this is the latest and greatest scientific development, it might even have a flavor of history thrown in, which is kind of the paleo. That was one of the big selling points of the paleo diet. And we now know that that quote unquote history, the idea that this is how our ancient ancestors ate and that they didn't suffer from any of the type of diseases that we do and so forth. We know now that that's kind of just a mythology, but it makes for sexy marketing. So when you put that aside, and as an individual, if you say, okay, I don't want to be sold on an ideology. I want to understand how the body works, and I want to understand really, why do we gain weight? Why do we lose weight? Why do we gain fat? Why do we lose fat? You can also throw muscle in there as well, gaining and losing muscle. And how does that relate to the foods we eat? Then, you know, again, it's actually very simple, but it's not what most people want to hear, because it's not a magic bullet. You know, you just need to eat this one food or not eat this one food, or you just have to eat on this certain schedule, or you just have to skip breakfast, or that's not a sustainable, holistic kind of approach to dieting.
Now, you talk about something called energy balance. I wonder if you could share with our listeners, what is it, how it works, and how it's used to lose fat and build muscle?
Sure. So energy balance is a scientific term, but it's very simple. And it's just the relationship between the energy that you expend, that you burn, and the energy that you consume. And of course, this relates to calories. Anybody that has any interest in dieting or has tried to lose weight or gain weight has come across calories in versus calories out. And that lens through which you can view dieting has come under a lot of attack recently. And some people have gone as far as saying that calories in, calories out doesn't matter at all. That energy balance is like some antiquated kind of relic of our scientific past. And now we know it's all about quality of calories, or we know it's all about hormones and so forth. But that's really not true. And the literature has made that abundantly clear. We have over a century now of metabolic research under our belts, and we know we have the fundamentals taped. We know, sure, there are extenuating circumstances in some people, you know, in the cases of metabolic disorders and so forth, where it's not that energy balance isn't the underlying mechanism that will dictate where they go from there, but sometimes some other things need to be addressed. But the average person, the bottom line is, if you're just to not move a muscle, your body burns a certain amount of energy to stay alive. I think anybody can understand that. When you kind of drill down to the cellular level, you have mitochondria, these little energy producing factories in your cells, and they create energy, and that's how we stay alive. And where do we get that energy to stay alive? We get it from food, of course. And that energy is measured in calories. That's what a calorie is. It's an energy potential. So when you're talking about food and dieting and so forth, really calories short for kilocalorie. So it's the amount of energy required to heat 1 kilogram of water 1 degree Celsius. So that's the actual amount of energy. And certain foods have a lot of calories, like foods that have a lot of fat, for example, like nuts, right? If you take 100 grams by weight or 10 grams or whatever of nuts, those are a lot more energy dense than the 10 or 100 grams of lettuce. And the key here is understanding how much energy you are burning, and you burn energy again just through staying alive, basic organic function, basic metabolic function, and so forth, and then through physical activity. And that includes all physical activity, not just exercise. It includes if you take the stairs instead of taking the elevator, it includes typing on the computer, it includes getting up out of the chair to go to the bathroom. Everything, of course, requires more energy over the baseline amount that it takes to stay alive. So we could just look at it in terms of 24 hours. You can come down to a bottom line number. Now, you could go get this measured exactly if you were to go live in a lab for a day or two and be in the controlled environment, but that's not necessary. There are fairly accurate ways that you can guesstimate how much energy that you're burning. And it's fairly accurate. You can come to a pretty reliable conclusion. Let's say within 10% of reality, maybe even 5% of reality, depending on how meticulous you're going to be with it. Let's just say that it's 2000 calories. So 2000 calories worth of energy, that represents a quantity of energy. And if that's what you're burning in a day, and if you were to eat the same amount of energy in food, regardless of what that food is, it could be junk food, it could be super quote unquote clean food, your total fat mass will not change. And the reason why that is because body fat is just an energy store. That's its primary purpose in our bodies, is to provide our bodies with energy when energy is not available from the food that we eat. So we eat a meal, we have a spike in energy from digesting and processing the food, a lot more than we can use unless we're like in the middle of a Tour de France or something. But when we're just sitting there on the couch eating chips, our body does not need as much energy as we are providing it in that moment. So the body has mechanisms whereby it can store a portion of that surplus of energy as body fat for future use. Let's say it takes an hour. Let's say you eat a snack and it has a fair amount of calories and it takes an hour to process all that. And then now there's no more energy available from food. If your body didn't have a mechanism whereby it can obtain energy that it needs, we would just die. So what it does is, when there's no more energy available from food, it flips to obtaining energy from our body fat stores primarily. Under certain circumstances, it also can pull a bit from muscle, but you know, let's just keep it simple and say that really what it does is it goes to body fat, and then it whittles away at body fat and survives off of our body fat until we eat food again, at which point that flips around the other way and it stops burning body fat because it says, hey, great, I have energy available from the food that was just eaten. I don't need to burn body fat. Cool, I'm going to process through that. I'm going to take some of that energy to survive, and I'm going to store some of it for the next period of fasting, so to speak. And from an evolutionary perspective, I mean, you can imagine that it wasn't that long ago in the grand scheme of things when we might go several days without food, and then we finally kill an animal or something, and then we feast and eat as much as we can. So then the body goes, okay, I need to get ready for this next, you know, who knows, it might be one day before I get to eat again, it might be a week. And so it's a simple physiological mechanism that's just tied into our survival. It's not as important now as it was back then, but that's just how the body works. So by understanding that, you can then use energy balance to your advantage, meaning that if you can come to a realistic estimation of how much energy you're burning, you can then relate that to how much energy you're eating. And if you can balance those out, your body weight won't change. Now, that isn't to say that the quality of calories doesn't matter. It isn't to say that you should just eat candy bars and protein shakes and, you know, McDonald's or something. There are other factors to take into account related to body composition and health. But if we're just starting with body weight, and that's what a lot of people have their attention on, is just weight. Once you've tackled body weight and you know how to control body weight, and that's no longer a mystery, then you can kind of get a bit more sophisticated and zoom out a little bit and look at body composition, which is, how does that weight break down? Again, ideally, regardless of how, you know, some guys and girls want to be very muscular and some don't, but most people want to have a fair amount of muscle. They want to at least kind of look athletic. So they would like if their body weight was a fair amount of muscle, not too much fat. And then, of course, you have your bones and organs and water and so forth. But again, that's moving to the next phase of dieting or understanding the metabolism and understanding nutrition and how it affects body composition. But it all starts with energy balance. It all starts with understanding that to increase total body fat stores, you must provide your body with a surplus of energy. I mean, this is basic physics. If body fat is at bottom an energy store, how is your body supposed to increase total energy stores without being provided with a surplus of energy, with more energy than it's burning? If you are eating just what you burn, what is your body storing? There's nothing left to store. And, you know, on the flip side, if you want to reduce your total body fat stores, if you are providing your body with all the energy it needs via food, then why would it tap into body fat stores and whittle away body fat stores for no reason? It won't. To lose body fat, you have to eat less energy than you're burning, because if you go back to what I was explaining earlier about how your body flips between these fed fat storing and fasted fat burning states, if you were kind of to put those on a graph, and if you looked at like the areas under the curve, if the fasted fat burning, if your body, let's just look at it in the course of 24 hours, is burning more fat than it's storing. Because again, if we look again at the energy involved, if you are burning 2000 calories a day, yet you are only feeding your body 1500 calories a day, where is it supposed to get the additional energy? That there's a 500 calorie deficit there. And again, your body, if it didn't have any way to get that energy, you would just die. In that sense, you could starve yourself to death very quickly, but it does have a mechanism whereby it can do that, and that's body fat.
Let me stop you there for a second, because, you know, there's all kinds of foods out there, and let's talk about the quality of calories, because you talk about you consume so much energy, which comes through food, and then we expend energy with our activity, even just sitting consumes energy. Because I could take a breakfast, for example, I could have a couple of donuts, I could have a Belgian waffle, I could have oat bran with berries, or I could have egg white omelet. Obviously, there's a difference between the energy content between all four of those foods.
Right. And that's pretty much kind of the long story short. Again, if we're just looking at energy, it's not that you can't have the Belgian waffles every day and that you are doomed to gain weight and get fatter and fatter if you eat the waffles every day. What you have to look at it, let's say that waffle breakfast is 1,000 calories, very high calorie breakfast, or maybe it's even more, but let's just say it's 1,000 calories and you only burn 2,000 calories in the day. So at 8 a.m., you're eating 1,000 calories and you go to bed at, let's say, I don't know, 10 p.m. So, you know, you're done eating at 8:30, let's say. So now from that point until you go to bed, you only have 1,000 calories left if we look at it in terms of expenditure. Now, if you end the day, if you're not thinking about that and you get hungry for lunch and you have another 1,000 calories, you go and you eat whatever. Again, what you eat isn't important here. It's just calories. Okay, so now you've already eaten all the energy that you're going to expend for the day. You've already eaten by 12 p.m. So then you have a 500 calorie snack in the afternoon, and then you have another 1,000 calorie dinner. And as you can see now, you're ending the day with, let's say, double the amount of energy that you've expended. And because, again, because of how the body's programmed, it is programmed to store a percentage of that. And depending on where those calories are coming from, some types of calories are stored more efficiently as body fat than others. But your body's just going to do what it knows how to do, which is, okay, I have a surplus of energy here. I'm going to be storing a percentage of this. And if you keep on giving me more, you're just going to keep on getting fatter. And again, that's just how the body works. Some people, because of various genetic factors and physiological factors, their bodies actually just burn a lot more calories at rest than others. That's very true. But that's kind of just how it works for everybody. Even the leanest people, they can get fat if they work at it. If they just eat enough food consistently, and it doesn't matter what types of food, they will gain weight. Again, that's true. It doesn't matter if we're talking broccoli or sugar. When we look at it in terms of energy balance, one is not better than the other. It's just that sugar has a lot of calories per gram of weight, whereas broccoli doesn't have nearly as much. So the quality of food, where that matters, is more related to health and nutrition. Broccoli, of course, provides our body with a lot of micronutrients and phytonutrients and things that it needs to not get cancer and die, whereas sugar doesn't really have any nutritive value. It just tastes good and gives us energy. So that's where the quality of calories comes in. And that's where, if when you look at the standard Western diet, that's one of the big problems, is people eat far too little fruit and vegetables. They eat far too little whole grains. They eat way too much highly processed foods, especially highly processed carbohydrates like sugars and other prepackaged junk. And they eat too much processed red meats. But you can eat all of that stuff. It's not very enjoyable, because unless you're very active, if you're exercising 5 hours a day and burning a ton of energy, you could eat quite a bit of junk food and not gain weight because you're burning so much energy. But eventually your body would start falling apart, because the whole point of food isn't just to like taste good and not make us fat. It's really to nourish our bodies. So that's where the quality of food comes in.
Let me move on to something. What changes, Michael, as we age? Because, you know, you can see people that are eating the same thing every single day. They look lean, and then all of a sudden they get into 30s, they put on a few more pounds, they get into their 40s, they're putting on more pounds, and they wake up and they go, you know, I'm not doing anything different. Why am I gaining all of this weight? Let's talk about the age factor, number one. And number two, what is really effective in terms of exercise? I know one of your books is called Cardio Sucks. So I'd like to get your views on that, because, you know, you see these people that go into gyms, they're on treadmills or Stairmasters or ellipticals for 45 minutes, 50 minutes a day. Let's talk about what is really effective and what also is effective in terms of weight gain or loss as we age. Why does that change? In other words, if a person's eating the same kind of food day in and day out, why do they gain weight many times as they get older? Each decade, they add more pounds.
Absolutely. So this is something, again, I've read pretty extensively on in terms of the scientific research on it, and it's pretty cut and dried. First, you have lifestyle changes as people get older, where, you know, a lot of people were very active throughout college and then become more and more sedentary as they get older. So that's one thing. Energy expenditure just goes down. Two, I'm speaking again from perspective scientific research, the average daily caloric intake has been going up here in the United States decade after decade. So people generally are eating more and more food. I know a lot of people think as they get older that their metabolism just kind of falls apart or the wheels fall off, and that's not true. If you don't do something to maintain your muscles, if you don't train your muscles in some way, you do lose muscle mass over time as you get older. And as you lose muscle mass, that reduces your metabolic rate, because one of the big drivers of metabolic rate, a major driver, is just, again, basic organic function, the basic stuff that needs to happen to stay alive. But then the number two factor, when we just look at the basic physiology, is total lean mass. Muscle burns calories. It requires energy to move, even to just move around. Somebody that has more muscle, of course, this makes sense when you just think about it in terms of work that needs to be done to move a more muscular body. It just requires more work than a less muscular body. And then there's another factor, which is hormonal, especially this is something you see particularly in men, where because of a number of lifestyle factors related to sedentary living, related to poor dieting, related to not exercising, and especially not training muscles, testosterone levels tend to go down over time as well. And we know that higher testosterone levels is generally associated with more leanness, and lower testosterone levels is generally associated with more fatness. Now, the good news on that is the testosterone side of things can be reversed by fixing the lifestyle factors. It's not just, oh, well, the damage is done, so now you just have to be on TRT for the rest of your life. Not at all. So those are really the main factors why people tend to just gain weight as they get older. Even things like vacations, people don't realize that there's research on this as well, that a lot of the weight gain tends to happen on the weekends and on holidays. And that makes perfect sense, because you have people where, you know, they keep things pretty under control during the week. And your body also has very sophisticated systems to regulate appetite, and they tie into your body's own internal sense of energy expenditure. So your body doesn't want to gain or lose weight. Your body wants to maintain where it's at, and it uses hormones and things to try to achieve that. But it has not been able to overcome the science of getting people addicted to food. And so you have a lot of foods that contain, you know, that are hyper palatable, that are very calorically dense. That's a problem. Our brains have not figured out how to deal with that yet. So this is where quote unquote clean eating can help people, and that if you just avoid certain types of food in general and kind of just generally get most of your calories from unprocessed, highly nutritious foods that you prepare yourself, the stuff around the perimeter of the grocery store, that kind of concept, your body's going to be able to do a much better job just regulating its own appetite. And, you know, you could probably incorporate a bit of portion control guidelines. It doesn't have to be very strict. But when you're eating a lot of prepackaged, processed foods, that's where you can run into trouble, because a lot of times those foods are engineered to be as tasty as possible and to give you the biggest dopamine hit possible, so you want to come back for more. And also, a lot of times they're not nearly as filling. So you might have a pretty big hit of calories and then be hungry 2 hours later. Whereas if you would have taken those calories and put them into fruits, vegetables, you know, some protein, whole grain, stuff like that, you might not be hungry for 4 hours. So those are the main factors. And in terms of the best type of exercise to kind of counteract really everything that we're talking about is absolutely resistance training. I'm obviously partial to weightlifting, but it doesn't have to be weightlifting. Any form of resistance training is number one. And for many reasons, there are vanity reasons that the type of body that most people want does require gaining a bit of muscle. And that's very motivating when you start seeing your body change like that. Two, resistance training workouts do actually burn quite a bit of energy. Some people think that you only train your muscles to get big. You have to do a bunch of cardio to get lean. That's not true at all. Again, what gets you lean is using energy balance properly and eating less energy than you are burning. The benefit of cardio is it burns energy, really. I mean, that's it. And there are some cardiovascular benefits as well, hence the word cardio. And particularly with like high intensity interval type stuff, also has, there are some other physiological advantages in terms of fat burning, that you burn more fat doing high intensity interval type training, you know, per unit of time than you do with low intensity. It's not that you have to do high intensity, but if you really want to get the most fat burning out of your cardio workouts, you'd want to do high intensity stuff. But I'd say, given people's time and inclinations, if you only have, let's say, 3 hours a week to exercise, spend at least 2 hours, if not all of that time, training your muscles, because that's going to give you the biggest bang for your buck, and it's going to benefit you the most. And really, I mean, first and foremost, is it's going to not only halt muscle loss, but it's going to add lean mass to your body, which, yeah, sure, makes you look good, but it's also tremendously important for all around health. I mean, you can kind of look at your body's lean mass almost as a reserve for your immune system. Like, that's why research shows that total lean mass is correlated with just really all cause mortality, actually, and especially survival rates in chronic disease and trauma. The people with more muscle tend to survive more often than the people with less. And you also see in muscle wasting diseases like AIDS, you lose muscle until eventually your heart stops, basically. So preserving an above average level of lean mass is one of the best things you can do for your long-term health. Even if you kind of fast forward to in our later years, we're not going to be the ones falling down and breaking our hips, and we're going to be able to still stay physically active. It really just has a lot of compounding benefits that you wouldn't necessarily realize at first blush. Because a lot of people think you train your muscles because you're insecure, or you like staring at yourself in the mirror or something. There's also a hormonal benefit that's worth mentioning, especially when you start getting into heavier weightlifting and compound type exercises that train a lot of muscles in your body, like the squat, like the deadlift, like the overhead press, like the bench press. Those are the exercises that I recommend people do the most of, because they not only are very effective ways for training every muscle in your body and increasing whole body strength and muscularity, there's also research that shows that they elicit the greatest hormonal responses. And so one of the easiest ways, for example, to just improve your hormone profile, and this is for both men and women, is to just start doing heavy compound weightlifting a few times a week. And if you wanted to really track it, go get blood work done and then go do a heavy compound strength training program. It could be my program, or it could be Starting Strength, or it could be 5x5 are some examples, but go do that for 3 months and then go get your blood tested again. And, you know, you might be shocked at how much better your hormones look.
As I read your stuff, Michael, the things that I walk away with is what I call quality, the quality of food. As we mentioned, the breakfast, you know, donuts, Belgian waffle, maybe an egg white or oat bran with berries. Obviously, there's more quality calories there. And likewise with exercise, I finally learned when it came to cardio, I do a program called Sprint 8 that is only 20 minutes, but it's interval training, and I burn more calories in that 20 minutes than I used to when I was doing cardio for 30 minutes to 45 minutes.
Yep. And you're reaping other benefits as well with sprint training that are related to hormones and even related to muscle mass, muscle preservation and stuff. So again, I'm a big advocate of doing that type of cardio. There's nothing wrong with doing, I wouldn't say tell people to stay away from the lower intensity, longer, you know, steady state stuff, but I would say do it if you like it. And if you don't particularly like it and you're willing to push through the tougher types of workouts, do the higher intensity stuff and you'll get more out of it.
Michael, if a listener was to read one of your books to start out, let's say they've been struggling with various diets, they've had trouble sticking to a good exercise program. If you were to recommend one book or maybe two books, what would you recommend?
Well, for men, I'd recommend Bigger, Leaner, Stronger. You can get it anywhere online where books are sold. Go check it out on Amazon. It has about 3,000 reviews now, 4.5-star average, lots and lots of results. And for women, it's Thinner, Leaner, Stronger. And the reason why that kind of even came about is when I first published Bigger, Leaner, Stronger, and it was kind of just the book that I wish I had when I got into the weightlifting game many years ago. I didn't really have a master plan for any of it. I just kind of wanted to see if anybody would care, and it ended up doing very well. But a lot of women were writing and asking, hey, can I do this as well? So I realized that I need to write a book specifically for women. And while a lot of the basics, the fundamentals are the same, men and women's bodies run on the same, you know, it's really kind of just the same hardware, and a lot of the software is the same. There are some differences. There are just some circumstances that, you know, women have to deal with that men don't. And on the training side of things, it's a little bit different because men are more concerned with their upper body. They're going to have to work on their upper body a lot more than their lower body to get the type of physique that they want. Whereas with women, it's the other way around. They're going to have to work a lot more on their lower body than their upper body. So the training programs are a bit different.
And as we close, Michael, you want to give out your website where our listeners can learn more about what you do?
Absolutely. It's Muscle for Life. So it's musclefor.life.com. That's kind of my central hub for everything that I do. And I post articles there every week. And you can learn about my books and supplements and all the stuff that I do.
Well, listen, Michael, thanks for joining us on the program. Appreciate it.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me.
You know, that was a rather interesting interview. You know, we've had a number of people on this program. Authors have written books from paleo to vegetarian. The interesting thing about this, and what I found about Michael's work that was rather interesting, it gets down to two things. the quality of calories in the quality of your exercise. And how many times have, you know, maybe you're one of those gym rats that goes to the gym each day, expends an hour and a half of working out. It's amazing just by changing what you do and making it more effective. You actually create more muscle, burn more calories, and can have weight loss and look better with a shorter amount of time. And it's just as we talked there during that interview, when you take the type of calories that you consume, because there's all kinds of diets out there. There's the Mediterranean, there's paleo, there's the various diet programs and Mediterranean that you see on television, but it's really the quality of calories that you consume versus the quality of calories that you burn. It gets down to that simple. It's the law of thermodynamics. And it's some really great, interesting things that you'll find if you go to his website and read it. It's going to kind of change your way. If you've been struggling with either a diet or an exercise program, for example, I tried to get my exercise program down to about an hour a day. I exercise 6 days a week. But I wanted to do it most effectively. And I found out, for example, by changing what I do cardio-wise, in 20 minutes, I can burn more calories and have more cardio benefits than what I was doing before when I was on the treadmill for a half an hour to 45 minutes. So it's definitely worth your look. His website is called Muscle for Life, and I highly recommend you check it out, read some of the articles, and you'd be surprised what you might find. In the meantime, well, as usual, we're out of time. We'd like to thank you for joining us here on Lifetime Income. Until we talk again, we hope you have a pleasant week.
You can subscribe to Financial Sense NewsHour in the iTunes and BlackBerry podcast libraries or at feeds.feedburner.com/FSM. Find more information about our guests at www.financialsense.com/newshour. Friend us at www.facebook.com/financialsenseonline. For our on-the-go listeners, you can access Financial Sense on your mobile device at m.financialsense.com. The Financial Sense News Hour is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be considered as a solicitation or offer to purchase or sell any securities. The investments, investment strategies, and investment philosophies discussed or presented on the News Hour each involve their own unique risk factors, which are not discussed on the show. Responses to listener inquiries are based on the personal opinions of James Poplava and do not take into account listeners' suitability, objectives, or risk tolerance. Financial Sense NewsHour and its parent company shall not be liable for any financial losses that result from investing in any companies profiled on or advertising with Financial Sense or arising out of the use of any material on the NewsHour. Be advised that you invest at your own risk.